Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of We're Gonna Need a Bigger Show. And this is the first interview of the Chattanooga Film Festival 2018. This is my favorite festival of the year. And we are here with...
Jill Gavargazian.
Right before I hit record, I said, you're gonna have to say your last name, because we both have, like, really difficult last names. What is the origin of yours?
It's Assyrian.
Okay, right on. I was not born with mine. I was born Michael Rogers, and then I got, like, saddled with Dubzilecki much later on, and that's really super frustrating. I had to, like, learn that in the second grade, which is not, when you're, like, a kid, that's bogus. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for sitting down. So I was first shown your work by a mutual friend, Josh Hull. He showed me The Stylist, the short. And I adored that. So your work has kind of been on my radar for a while. So I was really excited that you had, like, new stuff at the festival this year. But before we get into that, I kind of want to talk about, like, your early life and some of your early influences. I mean, obviously, horror. You kind of have made a home in horror, right?
Yes, huge fan.
When did that start for you?
As young as I can remember, I just liked the feeling of being scared.
Right.
Before I even knew that horror movies existed,
sure.
I think I just liked, like, you know, anything that if it made the game a scary version of it, like playing everything at night, it's like hide and go seek, or I remember just loving to, like, let's go explore the woods.
Yeah.
And that's because I thought it was scary, not because I was not scared of it.
Sure. Where did you grow up?
Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh, okay. Right on.
And then I think I first discovered horror films, I'd say I'm actually... was born kind of up north in Kansas City and moved way out south, and as a little kid that felt like I moved across the country, but it was like 20-minute drive. But I would go stay with my friend up north, and her parents did not pay attention to what we would rent, and that's when we started renting totally inappropriate things about 10 years old.
What were, like, some of the early ones that you remember?
Candyman is one of my first ones. That is still one of my favorite films.
That's a killer flick.
But I really remember watching Dr. Giggles, which is also a classic.
Larry Drake.
I wouldn't say the same type of film as Candyman, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Dr. Giggles doesn't get enough love. I think that's one of those, it's one of those weird 90s slashers that was kind of like early 90s, and there were a ton of them. But that one has, like, great performances in it, and it really does.
Yeah,
like, I love that movie.
When he just passed away a couple years ago, I hadn't seen it since I was a kid, so I was like, I'm gonna go buy it and watch it again.
Sure.
And I had a blast watching it again. I was worried. I was like,
it's actually aged pretty well.
Yeah,
like, even the effects, which, I mean, most of it, you know, well, no, all of it's practical. They do some weird, like, digital stuff at the beginning, and it's, like, really early digital stuff. But that's a killer flick. You said you kind of liked the scare in everything. Did that, like, translate to, like, haunted houses and things like that, too?
Oh, yeah. And we would build our own, you know, haunted houses in the basement for, like, nobody to go through. You know, it's like, we're the ones psyched about it. Then you, like, force your, you know, younger siblings to go through it or whatever. And we would also, I was in a lot of, like, theatrical type stuff. Like, we would put on our own plays, and I would do the same thing, like, we'd have it all organized, and then we'd want to be ready to put it on for someone, and I'd be like, I'm not doing this. I think I should have learned then that I was, like, a director,
right.
So I never wanted to actually perform it, but I liked, like, putting it together.
That's great.
But then going on stage, I'm like, just shut down.
Right. Well, so from there, I mean, when did directing, I mean, obviously, you know, there's, like, a vague interest early on, but when did, like, actual filmmaking, like, when did the two kind of start to intersect?
Really, I didn't start, like, filmmaking for real till 5 years ago. But, like, junior high, we would make stuff, you know, with my dad's camcorder, the giant VHS.
Yes.
And we would actually remake films.
Sweetum, yes.
We would remake, like, serious films, but it would just be three of us or two of us playing every character.
Right.
And we would, like, act it seriously, but then we would just watch it and, like, cry laughing. Oh, the most, I don't even... This is so stupid. We would remake, although it's still one of my favorite films, the Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. My friend Christy Griffiths, I'm shouting her out here. We remade Romeo and Juliet multiple times. And we would just cry, like, sobbing, laughing at what we would do.
That's incredible.
So we didn't do horror movies. That's weird. It was all... I also, like, I love really sad films.
Okay.
I like sad just as much as scary.
And I think that kind of, you can see that intersection in your work, you know, and the projects that you work on. Do you have like formal like filmmaking education, or did you just dive head first?
I just dove in. I started a screening series in Kansas City six years ago. After going to kind of my first big horror convention and really meeting like indie filmmakers for the first time. And I think at first I just wanted to figure out how to be a part of it, but making my own film, that didn't dawn on me at first. I think it's through, first I was just screening features, and then I kind of got more introduced to shorts and fell in love with them. Realized this is a possible way to start.
Right.
I noticed that the shorts are better quality than a lot of the features you see at that level, because you can put, you know, more time into something small versus stretching it out into a feature.
Were you screening things like from local filmmakers, or were you getting other like genre features, or what was the focus of the series?
It's mostly horror, but
genre
from all over the country. Right. I started with James Bickert's Dear God No.
Yeah.
Because I met all those crazy guys at Texas Frightmare Weekend, and
that's
we were
wild.
Destined to be. I was at the pool and I saw all these long-haired freaks, and that's a compliment for me. I was like, I'm going to be friends with those people in a few minutes.
That's awesome. So, like, what was the kind of the genesis of your first short? Rather, was it was Call Girl, right?
Yeah.
What was the thing that you were like, okay, I want to try this. I want to dive in.
It was written by Eric Havens, who we'd been good friends for a while at that point, and he wanted to direct it, and I was going to help produce it, and at that time I didn't even know what that meant. It's still hard to describe what a producer is to people, but after a few months we met with some people, he just decided that directing wasn't for him. He just likes to write and then move on and write something else. Directing is very stressful, and that's not his thing.
Right.
So I just was like, he actually offered to our friend first, who's made more films, who was out of town, and it was going to take him quite a while to even get to the project. So I like stuck my nose in, and I was like, can I direct this thing instead? I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'll figure it
out. Did you regret that decision? tell me about the process. I mean, like, as a first-time filmmaker, I think we all remember like our first project, and it's kind of like, oh shit, you know, we have those moments of we're in over our heads. But
yeah.
I mean, kind of what was that like for you?
It was very overwhelming.
Sure.
And I think that's what a lot of people are afraid of at the start, but you just have to like break it down and like figure it out piece by piece. That's with any goal, but especially filmmaking is literally like the breakdown of any goal in your life. Like you just have to, it's not something you can do on your own either. A lot of people are like, how do I do this? I'm like, well, you don't do it all. You have to find a team to do it with. I had some friends in the scene in Kansas City, and so I kind of just started putting it together. I had a friend who was a cinematographer and editor, and at first I was just going to, you know, like locally cast it, and I didn't know what I was going to do with the film, but I was friends with Lawrence Harvey from The Human Centipede. And I had him read the script just as for like if to get his advice as far as the story.
Sure.
And he said he would love to play the dude. And I was like, what?
Wow.
And I was just really intimidated. At first I was like, I don't think I can do that on my first film.
Right.
And then I spent some more time with him actually while he was filming Centipede 3 in LA. And I realized that I'd be crazy to like turn down an opportunity like that on my first project.
Absolutely.
And then his involvement got Tristan Risk interested.
Nice.
And so then I'm dealing with like an international, like known, at least like in horror cast
absolutely.
On my first film. So I was like extremely intimidated.
What were some of you, like the biggest takeaways kind of moving forward into like the following projects?
I realized that like that fear is like, that's what I think people like, in this position like thrive on. Like if you're not putting yourself in a new scary situation, then it's boring.
Right. And you're not growing.
And I learned a lot obviously from having Lawrence and Tristan and their experience versus like a whole group of people where we're all of us are like, this is our first time, what are we doing here? I definitely learned a lot, that and I've worked now with Lawrence and Tristan on multiple
sure.
other things.
Yeah. So it's like kind of, there's a through line kind of through your work as you start to develop style, like, no pun intended, as we get into the stylist. But the stylist, I mean, I absolutely adore the stylist. I think it's a perfect short film.
Thank you.
What I tell people, like, because I show it to people all the time, and they're like, well, what's, you know, what is it? And I'm like, it's Hitchcock by way of, like, Bill Lustig. Like, that, and that's really what it feels like. It feels like part Maniac and part Hitchcock. I meant to ask earlier, but was Hitchcock ever, like, an influence for you? Because you have such incredible tension building in, like, your scores, and everything feels kind of Hitchcockian. Was that ever, like...
Well, that is a huge compliment. What's crazy is I'd only seen really Psycho a lot growing
sure.
up. I only in the last few years started really watching all his other stuff because I love his work.
Yeah.
Like, you haven't seen half of it, Jill. You need to get your life together. I've probably listened to him speak more about his filmmaking than
okay.
I've seen his films, and I really admire his, he's like, he has a plan and that's the movie. Like,
sure.
Also, he was in a time where we were shooting on film and you didn't have the luxuries, but that also makes us lazy with digital. You know, like, he was like, you know, we didn't improv on set. Like, we had a blueprint. Like, you improv ahead of time and then you make a plan.
Sure.
He's like, if you can make a blueprint for a building and build it, then that's how a movie should be made.
Right.
He's like, in fact, when he speaks and he'll make jokes, you can't even tell he's joking. He's so, like,
dry.
Just dry and horrifying to me. But I also, like, he's not into, like, twists.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, he thinks that you should tell the audience things.
Right.
And I thought that with a stylist. Like, I didn't
Absolutely.
Want her to be a secret. Like, I was like, when we promote this movie, it's about a psycho hairstylist.
Right.
Like, that's not something we're revealing in it.
But her, it's a really kind of pitch perfect performance too, because in that short amount of time, you gain revulsion by what she's doing, but also this incredible sympathy for the character, and we're not even entirely sure, you know, what her affliction is, you know, and I think that's, I don't know, there's something really powerful. We'll talk a little bit more about as a kind of fleshing that out for a feature shortly, but. I mean, how important was that, especially as a strong female character, two strong female characters, to really kind of flesh that out and really, I mean, build that in such a short amount of time? What was that like?
That, I mean, a lot of that is definitely Najara's, the actress, her ability. She's unlike anyone I've ever seen act live.
Sure.
It looks so effortless, and I think that's what a good actor is, like, you can't see them trying at all.
Right.
Like, it's just like, just happens. And you're like, what? They must be insane to be able to do this and, like, flip out of it. A lot of that was, like, ahead of time talking to Najara about it and a lot of the characters that she was like. And that was, sorry, the most important thing to me, that I wanted to create a character that was sympathetic like that. Like,
sure.
She was more inspired by Leatherface to
okay.
me. Like, that's where it all started from, like, a female Leatherface, which is the same character psyche as Norman Bates, Maniac.
Absolutely.
All these people
yeah.
are this kind of the same makeup.
Well,
same with May.
To them. Yeah, May. I mean, that's.
And what's weird is I didn't grow up seeing Maniac. I actually only saw the remake first. I know. I'm sorry, people.
No.
Then I went back and watched it. So that wasn't, like, in my head my whole life.
Okay.
But also, I love how Maniac is portrayed. Like, it's a disgusting slasher, and he's also crying in bed with his mannequins, and
yeah.
I actually feel sorry for this
yeah,
guy.
Yeah,
I just like movies that, like, fuck with your head as the viewer, like, and that give you, like, just a, I don't like villain, you know, you can easily make a flat villain.
Sure.
Like, in many slasher films, we don't know anything about the killer.
Absolutely.
It's just, like, fun and exploitative. I've just always been interested in, like, why people do things.
Yeah.
No matter how disturbing
sure.
it may be, I read some horrible things about serial killers
well,
on a regular basis.
In reading real life things, kind of moving into one of the films you're here at the festival with, 42 Counts. I mean, that's, again, I think you do an incredible job of building tension in a very short amount of time. made all the more horrifying, but that it's a true story. When did you first hear this story, and when were you like, okay, this story needs to be told, you know, on film?
Well, I was pretty close to this store, like the people that it happened to.
Okay.
Not really close to the girl that it exactly happened to, but I'm going to try to decide how much I want to talk about this,
sure.
I also realize you should just talk about it in interviews or it's pointless. But the true story happened in 2014 in Kansas City, and it was in basically a local tattoo shop that was a chain. The guy who owned it had a couple apartments above, and he would rent it out to his artists. And in one of those, he had 13 hidden cameras watching a girl for who knows how long. And what always like struck me about that story was like that guy was normally when you hear about crazy people, you're like, they were so normal.
Sure.
This guy never seemed normal to me
right.
in the first place. But I guess what struck me most is a lot about it. But for the girl, like, what that's like to like live with that kind of a trauma.
Yeah.
And that's really what I wanted to do with the film. And the film lacks a little bit of like a resolution for that reason.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting, though. I mean, you could have easily had a resolution. I mean, you could have, you know, added a few minutes and you know, had comeuppance or whatever. But
yeah.
the fact that you kind of end it where you do is haunting. And it's, you know, I mean, one of the things that your film shares in common with a lot of the films this year is that you subvert expectations really well. And I think that's kind of a through line this year. Was that a very like direct decision to do that?
Yeah. I did write multiple versions of the end where it was more like you could more turn it into like a traditional horror film. There
sure.
could be like something violent at the end or, but I just realized like I wanted viewers to walk away thinking about what it'd be like to be her versus
yeah.
like closing it up and then you have nothing to think about. But actually I decided to make the film because after The Stylist, I knew I didn't have the energy to raise like 15 grand
right.
to make another short film.
Sure.
So I was,
that the budget
for a while?
Times?
Yeah.
Wow.
For a while I was trying to figure out something I could make also that didn't have special effects, that was interesting, more drama focused.
Sure.
Cause I also don't want to only make horror. I want to show I can do other things.
Absolutely.
So then just one day it dawned on me that I've always been really interested in that story. Like that's a simple story that you could tell in a, you know, quick, a little short film.
Yeah.
And then it just went from there, but I was scared for a long time about the lack of resolution and how people are going to feel about it.
How
so
did
I'm
you,
very happy to hear positive.
I mean, I love it. I think it is. It's such a haunting moment. And it when they finally get into the basement and they without revealing too much, they take the drop cloth off of everything. I literally said out loud, "Nope, this is awful. This is terrible." and it really, I mean, again, you do such a because it just it starts off simply enough. It's two women talking, and very quickly. And I wasn't sure, like, when she discovers, you know, what's going on, you in a sentence, just explain it, and it's perfect. And then in moving into the ending, I mean, the pace just ratchets up until it's kind of unbearable.
And a lot of that's the music, for sure.
Yeah, so talk about, I mean...
Like, editing the film was... I edited it myself. I'm not a great editor as far... I'm not technically... I can't do anything.
Sure.
But like while I'm doing it, I play everything in my head as far as like what the score will be. So I'm watching it in this horribly awkward state for so long.
Right.
No music. And I'm like, so finally Nicholas Ehlert, he did the score. He also did The Stylist.
Beautiful. Both. I mean, absolutely beautiful.
He's just so talented. And this is the first time we've had, he didn't do it all. He wrote it all, but he brought in a cellist on this one too.
Okay.
So it's really
wow.
exciting to have like a strings on my
sure.
on a film. But Nick realized it before I told him. I normally give him lots of references and then go through like how I want it to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hard thing to direct music.
Sure. And yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So he realized, like, the music is, like, a huge piece of the, like, this, the basement scene. Like, it needs to, like, be telling the viewer what's going sure. on. Like, it needs to completely reflect what these girls are experiencing. Otherwise, it, I mean, without the sound and the music, that scene is very scary
sure.
in a bad
yeah.
way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, well, I think... The music is a character unto itself, in both films. Did you give them temp tracks? Did you say, you know, like, did when you're editing, do you put in, like, temporary, or are you just discussing?
I did it for a second. I don't know what I'm doing with temp tracks. See, that's why I say I'm not technically advanced.
Sure.
So I've, like, do things... Most editors will put it in nice music that makes sense with the moment.
Sure.
So that's what's even more amazing is that he's keep coming up with this when I'm just giving him this, like, silent
right.
movie. The film Seven was used in a lot of inspiration from, like, the look of the basement and the score.
Yeah, you had posted the screenshots, and that was before I had watched it, and then watching it, that was actively in my head, and it was like, oh, okay, yeah, I could definitely see that kind of thumbprint on there for sure.
And at first, I think I sent him stuff that was a little more orchestral without really any digital-type sounds.
Right.
And he pointed out to me, he's like, well, it makes sense for us to have some, like, electronic-type stuff
yeah.
in here mixed in with it because that's what we're dealing with
right.
in this story. He always has great ideas. Like, I almost feel bad. I normally have tons of notes with everything that happens except for when he sends me something. I'm like, this is freaking awesome. My sound guy had started on a part before he had the score, and he had built this, like, our big reveal moment.
Yeah.
I was like, this is great, but we don't need that because, like, the score already built that moment,
right,
unfortunately.
Right.
So it's like the sound and the music does have to stay together, or one can bury the other one.
Absolutely. So one of the other things you're doing this weekend is a workshop with David Lawson, who we've had on before. We love David. But you're talking about adapting short for feature. Now, is that something that's actively happening with the stylist? I know that's, like, the example, but, I mean, are you all working on...
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible.
We wrote a script, Eric Havens and I.
Uh-huh.
Like, I kind of worked on it for, like, solo for a while, and then he's, like, the legit writer and makes everything that I'm trying to say make sense. But we spent a couple years on that, and then I sent it to David back in October. I'm going to call him out on this, but he read it, like, that day and called me that day and
wow.
said he wanted to help on it. I was like,
holy shit.
Well, you know how long it takes to read a script sometimes?
Yeah.
So I was, like, just blown away, so
wow.
flattered. And I've been a huge fan of David's work for years, so
yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's still surreal. So we're in the, you know, shopping it phase. So somebody please fund the movie so we can make it.
Well,
this
I don't
year.
Understand how people could watch the short and not want to see that as a feature. I think it's an absolutely incredible short. And I want to see it as a feature. What's that process been like? I mean, obviously you get to kind of explain a little bit more about the character, but when do you decide, and or was there a moment where you're like, okay, this is too much explanation as to what's going on with this character? And how did you discover that balance in writing?
Yeah, that was hard. It was hard to decide, like, what part of her story are we going to tell?
Sure.
Are we going to try? Because people want to, like, everyone's like, why does she do this? I'm like, I'm not literally going to tell, like, her life story from a child to,
right.
like, a biopic about
right.
her. So it was challenging because I wanted it to be encapsulated of, like, one time of her life, not trying to spread out 20 years in a movie.
Sure.
And I also wanted to capture the moment in the short of her life, like, the moment in her life that the short exists is kind of supposed to feel like the end, like she's about to get caught. Like,
okay.
She sabotaged herself. She
yeah.
just killed a lady that was on her way to a party. Like, that was kind of what I was trying to say with that. Like, she wasn't making any smart decisions.
Sure. So and that you may not be able to say, but in the feature, I mean, is that, do you find that to be like the middle moment of the film? Is that a second act moment, or is that?
It's kind of like that feeling is like the end of what I want the end of the movie to
okay.
be like. Like, basically it's about her, like, her own like self-sabotage.
Sure.
But it's not like, it's not a slasher. It's definitely more like a psychological horror film.
Absolutely.
Like, she doesn't go through and kill, kill, kill.
Right.
That might be maybe why it's getting, people might expect it to be a slasher movie. But it's almost, actually the first person that read it said like the coolest thing ever. They said it reminded them of, if they said it was like if Argento wrote Single White Female.
Wow. That's so an incredible compliment.
It's very much like her obsessing over one person.
Sure, sure. Well, I think that's incredible. And I'm really excited to kind of follow as this, you know, progresses. I mean, 42 Counts also kind of feels like it could easily be a feature. I mean, is that something that you're at all interested in, or do you feel like you've said what you've had to say?
I don't, that wasn't my intention to expand it.
Sure.
But that story could be expanded. I don't know. That's like with the stylist, it was my intention from the start for sure.
Okay. So with the stylist, it was like, this is kind of a pitch. Like this is, I
yeah,
can
I just,
definitely use this.
I knew that was only my second project when I was starting it.
Sure.
And I knew there's no way I could make a feature yet.
Right.
And I, like I have these standards where I want to make like that 15-minute movie look like a Hollywood movie versus, like I said, stretching it out into a feature.
Absolutely.
We could have made a feature for $15,000 sure. that looked like hell that no one ever would want to watch.
Those so,
exist.
Yeah, maybe a little too much. that's a really interesting thing now is that it's so easy to do it, which is great, but the problem is that it's so easy to do it. You know, I mean, and then there's so much out there, and it's just hard to get a voice. I mean, kind of backing up, how did you get looped in with Shudder? Because that was where Josh initially had sent me the film, and I mean, that's what a great platform for it.
Well, I met Sam Zimmerman, their like lead curator,
sure.
at a Fantasia when I was there with the stylist in 2016, and so he approached us and wanted it on Shudder.
That's incredible.
Since I've had lots of filmmakers ask me like for the contact, right. I'm like, I think they only reach out.
Right.
I'm not getting myself in trouble, y'all.
Well, I mean, it's such a great platform by itself, and I think that the shorts that they pick are just, you know, they're top quality. So, congratulations.
And it's great to like that someone will finally put shorts out.
Yeah.
Most people think there's. You know, there's just nowhere for them to go after
right.
festivals.
Which is silly. I mean, it works, you know. I mean, when I first got my, you know, Shudder membership, I was just kind of surprised by the amount of, like, shorts that I had either seen through festivals or, like, had heard about. And I'm like, oh, I can finally see this. I can, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it's a great, I think they're kind of cutting edge in a lot of what they do.
Yeah.
As far as programming is concerned. So kind of talking, you mentioned this earlier in what a producer does. I mean, how did that kind of present itself to you? And you know, I mean, being a producer is not, that is the one thing I don't envy at all, the job of the producer. What has that been like? How have people approached you, or how are you choosing projects that you're like, okay, yeah, I can help out with this. Like what's that process been like for you?
Well, I've only produced a couple of things outside of my own work, but I actually like that job because I'm an organized, like, controlling type of person. So I'm great at, like, making a plan.
Right.
And a lot of producing is, like, you know, sending emails and making lists
right.
and spreadsheets and lots of managing type jobs.
So how did BFF Girls kind of, which is something else that'll be playing this weekend, I got a chance to see it, and it's equal parts just bonkers, and I mean, it's got a great heart to it, and it's incredibly funny. I mean, I didn't know what I was getting myself into.
Nobody will know what they're getting themselves into.
It's perfect for this festival. But it was like a really like great surprise. I mean, I had no idea, and I just found myself like sitting at home alone, just laughing out loud. I just thought it was kind of a brilliant kind of coming of age
yeah.
set to a really different take on that kind of thing. how did that kind of come into your periphery?
Well, I've known Brian Lonano, the director, for a few years. Our films, his previous films, we've kind of like been at festivals together, like his previous Gwilliam and The Stylist were playing all over. I mean, like, totally opposite kinds of films. So it's funny, like, on our pages it says, from the producers of Gwilliam and The Stylist. And everyone's like, what in the fuck could that mean? Like, if you've seen Gwilliam, you know what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
I've always admired Brian's work. Like, it's so wild and disgusting and crazy, but somehow, like, it has something that other films don't have. And I don't even know how to, like, describe it, because, you know, in horror there's tons of just gross out stuff.
Sure.
Like, that's the intention, and I see a lot of that, and like, it doesn't do anything for, like, it's just so clear that, like, that's the only goal.
Right.
There's something about Brian's work that, even though it's absurd, it somehow feels more intelligent, or like it was approached in a more intelligent way.
Sure.
I don't even, or in professional. His two previous shorts, you know, they premiered at South by Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
He's made now over 10 short films. And so I just, as far as working with him, I admired him so much and knew I'd learn a lot from him. And he's makes stuff, you know, totally different than me. So at first he was just posting about the film. He was working with SAG and I had worked with them. So I messaged him what I was helping him out. And then I was like, yeah, you need more help. Like, do you need more help on this project? I'd love to help. Like, somehow more.
Sure.
And then it just came from there.
Wow.
And I mean, it was shot in Atlanta and I'm in Kansas City, so leading up I was just doing tons of the emailing. I connected him with Lawrence Harvey, who voiced a perverted cat in the film.
I didn't know that was him.
Yes.
That's incredible.
They even made that cat's face
yes.
look like him.
Oh,
which was
so
Lucas
good.
Godfrey, this amazing puppet. It's horrifying.
Wow. Oh, yeah. It's especially that last shot of the puppet. I was just like, Jesus Christ.
But I came down for the shoot. We shot it over 2 weekends. I mean, it was just so fun. Brian's just very professional, very passionate about what he's doing, and takes it very seriously while, like, having a lot of fun.
Sure.
Like, I mean, he storyboarded his whole film 3-4 times before the shoot, like, months ahead of time. I just like people that are that organized.
Absolutely. Well, and it shows. I mean, there's so much going on in it. I
oh,
mean,
yeah.
It's very, you know, it's faithful to what it's... I wouldn't call it parody, I mean, because I don't think that's quite what it is, but it is... I mean, it's live-action anime.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's what it
and,
is.
And, like, everything has so much intention behind it. The
yeah.
blocking, the camera moves. Like, I even would notice stuff, like, once it's done and be like, that shot you planned is, like, gorgeous. Like,
yeah.
And you planned that, like, 5 months before we shot it.
And there were things, just even content-wise, I mean, the gun at the end, and just how when each character turns into their, you know,
yes.
kind of Sailor Moon half. I mean, like, it was just, I mean, I think
it's so fun.
Yeah, perfect. Pitch
I'm
perfect,
so excited though. To see it, like, with a
and
crowd
I,
this weekend.
Is this the premiere for it?
No, we premiered a couple weeks ago at the Boston Underground.
Okay, how did it play there?
It played well. We couldn't go.
Oh,
so
bummer.
This is all of our... Today and tomorrow will be our first times all seeing it
awesome.
With a crowd.
Well, that's incredible. So I know you're kind of shopping The Stylist around. I mean, what else is on your radar right now? What else are you kind of working on, or can you say?
Well, I have another feature that's being shopped around that we're not talking about yet.
Okay.
I'm really learning, like... Through all the years of festivals, I've seen, you know, filmmakers talk about their films afterwards, and they're like, you know, we started this project 5 years
yeah,
ago.
Sure.
Now I'm understanding, like, oh, okay, so we might not be making this film for till I'm 90.
Right.
Cool. But it's just sometimes you get so close to thinking it's about to happen,
oh, yes.
and then it doesn't. It's that keeping, like, your morale up. Everyone in this world knows this, like, filmmaking is this, like, roller coaster.
Yeah.
It's like one morning I'm like,
and the lows.
Life is over.
Low.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm like, why am I still doing this? Like, I'm going to quit.
Right.
And then 3 days later, I'm like, everything's going to be great.
That's incredible. Well, I mean, for people who want to, you know, kind of follow you and check out your work, I mean, where can they do that?
My website is sixtape.com.
Okay.
Two X's stole Nikki's name. And then from all my social media is connected there.
Awesome. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed The Stylist. I think both BFF Girls and 42 Counts are incredible. And I'm really excited to see what happens. And I really hope you enjoy the rest of the festival.
You too. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So for Bigger Show, this has been Mike D. Check out the rest of our Chattanooga Film Festival 2018 coverage, probably over like the next month. I mean, there's a lot. So enjoy, and we will see you next time. Goodbye. We're going to need a big show. We're going to need a big show.